The material provided today is for informational purposes only. It should not be considered legal or financial advice. Consult with a financial professional for your own needs. John E. Sestina & Company disclaims any and all liability for the interpretation and use of the content provided today.
I need help getting out of my student loan debt.
I'm so worried. How am I going to afford taking care of my parents?
When's a good time to get into the market?
I'm really not sure when I should start taking my Social Security.
I wonder if I have enough insurance.
I wonder when I can retire.
It's time to talk about your money, managing to be wealthy. Our team of fee-only financial planners is ready to help you create better financial habits, envision your long-term goals, and understand money management better than ever. Our resident hosts of John E. Sestina & Company are on deck to show you the way.
Thank you for joining us today. I'm your host, Tracy Bennett. In studio today with me are certified financial planner Cole Hammack and our special guest, Camden Solomon from the Seniority Benefit Group. Hey guys, nice to have you here, Camden.
Nice. Thanks for having me. And very excited.
I know it's no need to be nervous or anything. I'm usually the one that falls flat on my face on these conversations.
And I know
and
I make a fool of myself.
And
so
I know it's coming, so
right.
Just
easy
lean
enough.
On me.
Perfect.
Today we're going to talk about Medicare. And for those of us who are not in the financial industry as a profession, trying to sort of navigate the whole process, I hear a lot of people confusing Medicare and Medicaid. So let's get that right off the table now. Let's just explain
for
the
sure.
difference between the two.
Absolutely. So the big misconception on Medicare and Medicaid, the first thing, Medicare is for individuals who are 65 and older. Medicaid is often for individuals with lower income. There are cases where individuals can have both, but primarily most individuals are going to be on Medicare.
Both. I did not know that, that mm-hmm. you can collect both.
Absolutely.
We'll probably get into that.
Yeah.
Soon. Okay, so I want to jump. So let's talk about the intricacies, the hidden benefits, and some of the emerging services. So a typical scenario that I have carved out might look something like you've got Zoe, who's about to turn 65, plans to retire soon. Right now, she's got health insurance through her job, but she knows she'll need Medicare when she turns 65. As her initial enrollment period begins through her job, she's unsure about the different parts of Medicare. Most of us are. We talk. Mm-hmm. I know mm-hmm. in my circles, we talk in circles because there's just so much confusion.
I'm
to
sure
those
it's by design
us.
Too, right?
Yeah. Don't start. She knows Part A covers hospital stays, but isn't sure if she needs Part B for doctor visits. And this is words just alphabet soup to me.
Yeah,
this is
absolutely.
Like for doctor visits or if a Medicare Advantage plan might be better for her. So she takes prescription medications. She needs to figure out how to enroll in Part D for drug coverage. She's worried about missing deadlines, facing penalties, and that's terrifying.
Yeah, absolutely. This is a huge, and a lot of people deal exactly with this situation. And the first thing I always say when someone is approaching 65 but still having employer coverage is that they actually can push off Medicare entirely. So they do not need to sign up for Medicare at 65 if they do have that employer coverage. The one big key that we point out is that the employer coverage needs to be credible coverage. And what that means is that there's 20 or more employees on that employer plan. So if there's under, what actually would happen is Medicare would be your primary coverage. So they would need to switch if there were under 20 employees. However, if there's over 20 employees, they can stay on that Medicare or on the employer plan and essentially push off Medicare until that retirement date. So it's a lot of people get very confused where they think they have to do something at 65, mm-hmm. which is not necessarily the case. And a lot of times those penalties, those lifelong penalties, really freak people out on making that decision too early. And that's really where individuals can say, hey, is my employer coverage the best coverage for myself right now? Or does it make sense to switch over to Medicare? And there's a lot of different scenarios where individuals might choose one or the other.
Mm-hmm. And I assume we're going to get into that, and I don't want to put the cart before the horse, but is there a best practice to determining what is better to weigh that? Is it a website people go on?
A lot of people can go on to Medicare.gov. That's really going to give you your full scope of Medicare Advantage plans, Medicare supplement plans, as well as prescription drug plans. The and it also kind of depends on how many people are on that employer coverage, because say spouses or even kids are on that employer coverage, it might make sense to keep that coverage going for the family. So there's a lot of situations where it might make sense to switch to Medicare or stay on that employer coverage. There's a lot of factors that go into that.
And that's where you come into play. So let's talk a little bit about Seniority Benefit Group and what you mm-hmm. do for them and what kind of clients, because I know we work together as far as client needs are concerned at times when it comes to getting information. Mm-hmm. So I know you and Cole have worked together before. Let's talk about what you do.
Yeah, absolutely. So we here at Seniority Benefit Group, we are a Medicare guidance firm. So really we are kind of walking people through signing up for Medicare Part A and Part B, maybe exploring the retirement benefits through companies or retirement plans, looking at Medicare supplement and prescription drug plans, as well as Medicare Advantage. So really, I like to call us kind of a kind of helping hand through that Medicare process, just because it is so confusing and people have so many questions with that Medicare process. Really, we just want to act as kind of that service to kind of help people make sure they feel they're making the right decision as they are approaching Medicare eligibility.
And I'm sure it can't possibly take you less than an hour to go through all this, right? Because, I mean, you guys are combing through everything. So what's this going to cost a client to do this?
So our service is actually, we don't charge our clients anything for consultations or meeting over the phone or in person. What happens is if we do enroll that client in a policy, the insurance companies will compensate us on the back end.
So that's pretty cool.
It's great too that we're working with the same exact plans that clients would see on their own if they were to do this by themselves. So really it's kind of an extra benefit for these clients to make sure that they feel that peace of mind when approaching Medicare.
And that doesn't increase the client rates either on the policies,
nope.
Right? That's just kind of baked into it.
Correct. Yep.
That's cool.
That is amazing. Yeah. I'm always, as a consumer, afraid to take advantage of services mm-hmm. like that for that very reason, because you just sit and think, is there going to be a hidden fee coming my way?
I think there are
this?
A lot of companies where you call in, they're going to charge you some consultation fee or something.
Mm-hmm. For sure. And that really, my main job is to educate the client on all of the different enrollment periods, all of the different plans, and at the end of the day, the client makes the best decision for themselves.
Okay, well, that's a great segue. So let's talk about applying for Medicare. There are basically three age groups, right?
Yep, correct.
You want to discuss what those are?
Yeah, I would say first the most popular one that people will have is turning 65. So when an individual is turning 65, they are approaching their initial enrollment window. And that initial enrollment window is a seven-month period that is 3 months before the 65th birthday, the month of, and 3 months after. So say, for example, someone was turning 65 in January, their enrollment period would open up October 1st. Also, it would also go through essentially the end of March too. So you have that seven-month window to really enroll in Medicare Part A and Part B, and also pick out one of those Medicare supplement, Medicare Advantage plans to supplement original Medicare.
And the supplement plans pertain to prescriptions, right?
Correct, yeah.
Solely?
So the supplement plans, Medicare Advantage, Medicare Supplement are two, and maybe this is kind of getting a little bit deeper into it, and I'm happy to do that, but the Medicare Supplement and Advantage plans are really going to kind of enhance those benefits of Medicare A and B. Because if you just stuck on Medicare A and B, also known as the original Medicare, you're only going to have 80% medical coverage. So say someone goes inpatient or has a surgery, they might pay 20% or percentage of that entire surgery bill. So that's where we want to add on one of those additional policies to make sure that they have that 100% coverage and also make sure that they have prescription coverage as well.
And I know it matters so much at the individual level, which makes more sense, Advantage versus a Medigap policy. But can you kind of paint a picture in terms of when one might be more appropriate
yeah.
for another and really what the differences are? Because I know for a fact that can be confusing, and I know I mix the two up from
yeah,
time to
absolutely.
Time, so that'll be helpful.
And first, so just making sure everyone's aware, Medigap policies are also known as Medicare Supplement. So they're mm-hmm. kind of interchangeable. But the biggest difference between a Medicare supplement and a Medicare Advantage plan is really how you pay for those, pay for the policy. Medicare supplement, often you're going to have a higher premium for the policy, but a lower deductible and out-of-pocket. Medicare Advantage is just flipped around where you'll have a lower premium, but higher copays, higher coinsurance. So I often say, if someone comes to me and says, hey, Cam, I've got a surgery upcoming. I was inpatient last year. We're going through chemo treatments, having a lot of utilization. Mm-hmm. They might fall towards that Medicare supplement side.
Sure, and that higher premium exactly. Set those expectations for cost, basically.
For sure, yep. And it really limits their out-of-pocket expenses when they go and use those services. Mm-hmm. On the other hand, if someone comes to me and says, hey, I go to the doctor once or twice a year, it might make sense to save on those premiums with the Medicare Advantage plan and pay a small copay or coinsurance when they do use that coverage. Sure.
Are there any limitations with Medicare Advantage, or what happens if you try to switch between the two?
That's a great question. There are some limitations. The first thing to know is when you are first going into Medicare, you're going to have guaranteed acceptance into both policies. So if you say, hey, I'm 65 and I want to go with a supplement plan, you have guaranteed acceptance.
Same thing with irrespective of like pre-existing conditions or
correct.
Anything. That's really cool.
They do not look at any pre-existing conditions. So if you're retiring past 65, same thing. You have that guaranteed acceptance into that supplement plan. Same thing with Advantage. Now, when it comes to switching policies, that mm-hmm. gets a little bit more difficult. So I always say switching from a Medicare supplement plan to Advantage is a lot easier. You can do that during the open enrollment period, which is October 15th through December 7th, and have guarantee acceptance into that Advantage plan. Now, on the other hand, if an individual starts out with a Medicare Advantage plan and wants to switch into that supplement, they'll have to go through medical underwriting to get accepted.
Okay.
So it's much more difficult from Advantage to supplement than supplement to Advantage.
Okay. What happens if somebody is younger than 65 and they want to apply? What are the guidelines for that?
Yeah, so if an individual is under 65 and Medicare eligible, normally they would get this eligibility through receiving Social Security for 24 months or Social Security disability, excuse me, for 24 months, they would be granted Medicare eligibility. At that point, they are only allowed to enroll in a Medicare Advantage plan. So anyone under 65 cannot enroll in a supplement plan. But however, if once they do hit that 65th birthday, they would have the eligibility to switch into that supplement plan and have guarantee acceptance if they wanted to.
Okay, that's interesting. So really pertains to medical conditions and disabilities in
correct.
That scenario.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, what about after 65? Let's say somebody prolongs, they're working until they're 67, 68, maybe even 70. Mm-hmm. I know a lot of 70-year-olds that are still working.
Absolutely.
And they're on their employer's insurance. At what point are there penalties for that, or can they just apply at any point?
So
once they retire,
I guess. They're with applying for Medicare after 65, that would be called your special enrollment period. So oftentimes, like you said, when an individual is going to retire past 65, they're going to have a four-month window to apply for Medicare Part B. That four-month window is 3 months before that retirement and the month of. So a lot of times I'd say you really want to make sure that one, you don't have any gap in coverage when retiring, and also that it's a smooth transition from employer coverage to Medicare.
Makes sense. 62, when you're eligible for Social Security, how does that play into this timeline?
Yeah, so Social Security and Medicare have a connection solely just through applying. First thing is the one, you can apply for Medicare on Social Security. A lot of times if an individual is turning 65 and they are already receiving Social Security, they'll be automatically enrolled in Medicare Part A and Part B. So you actually don't have to do anything in your initial enrollment period. A lot of times too, with that Part B premium, normally that premium will be directly taken out of an individual's Social Security check. So they don't have to pay that monthly bill or monthly premium. It'll just be automatically taken off the top.
Mm-hmm. Did you want to say something?
Yeah, well, so I had more of a question going back to some of the supplements before we keep along this train of thought. So thinking like Part D coverage, as people think about the donut hole, I can't remember if we're going to be talking about that one later, but I know that's a pretty big concern or consideration.
Absolutely.
And then things like dental vision, kind of how they work with Medicare, because I know that's always been a gap in the past.
For sure. The prescription coverage, and maybe this is something we talk about in a minute, because that's going to be a big change coming for 25.
We can save the change, but what's the
extra benefits? Yeah. For sure. A lot of those extra benefits are included on the Medicare Advantage side. So what will happen is that Medicare Advantage plan will cover your 100% medical coverage. Oftentimes it has prescription coverage included, and even dental, vision, hearing, over-the-counter, a lot of those extra benefits are built into that policy. And the great thing about it is it's one plan, and you've got all of your benefits
simple,
included.
Sure.
It's very simple. And because a lot of people, they're used to having dental, vision.
Exactly.
A lot of those extra benefits with their employer plan. So it's a nice kind of bonus that's added into that. Now, going back to the supplement side, dental vision is not included in that, but it's a very easy add to add on a standalone dental plan, standalone vision plan. So just because you go with that supplemental side doesn't mean you can't have the dental and vision.
Yep. Are those, and I kind of want to recap how to understand Part A, Part B, Part C, Part D. So I know we've talked a little bit of detail about those, but if we can just kind of bullet point, explain, all right, Part A is, Part B is, and just kind of give people, let them take a breath and understand, okay, where do I fit into this word soup?
Absolutely. And 100%, a lot of letters and very confusing. The first thing, so Medicare Part A is going to be your hospitalization.
Okay.
And Medicare Part B is going to be your outpatient care or doctor's visits.
Okay.
Now, Part A and B together give you Original Medicare. And Original Medicare is what's offered through the government. So anyone who's on a Medicare Advantage plan, Medicare supplement, all will have Medicare Part A and Part B. Now, what you add on after that, like a Part C plan, a Part D, Medicare supplement, those are kind of what we're talking about in those different policies. So the Part C is often referred as Medicare Advantage. Part C, Medicare Advantage, means the same thing. You have Part D, which will cover prescriptions or drugs. And then you also have your Medicare supplement or Medigap policies.
So all of those programs or policies we're talking about, when someone is going onto the Medicare website or they're asking for your help, do you have a list of options for them, or do they have to research those companies on their own when it comes to Part D?
Yeah, so, and I guess, are you asking about us specifically? Or just kind of as a whole?
From the consumer's perspective.
For sure. In this scenario, I would often recommend going to Medicare.gov, working with an agent, because a lot of times they're going to have access to all of the policies out there. So there's a lot of different plans, a lot of different insurance companies that a lot of people have worked with. And really, the biggest differences between all of these plans, it is really going to be the network of doctors and hospitals and how prescriptions are covered. The medical side of it is actually going to be very similar from company to company. But the biggest thing that you want to make sure is that you have access to your doctors and hospitals that you've have established relationships with, in making sure that your prescriptions are covered by the formularies of these policies.
So it's similar to doing your research for our clients, for instance, when we're looking at insurance policies goal.
Sure.
Yeah. It's similar to open enrollment. When you're kind of evaluating what you have, you kind of have to do a little bit more research.
What's old, what's new, all that good stuff. You got it.
Okay. I think we've covered that pretty well. So enrollment periods, I think you went through that, but Medicare has different enrollment deadlines. How can somebody be sure they don't miss one and avoid penalties and gaps? Is there a methodology to that?
So that's making sure that if you do want to have that guarantee acceptance and no penalties, if you're enrolling in your initial enrollment period, making sure that it's within that 7-month window. If you're retiring after 65, making sure it's in your special enrollment window of that 4 months. Another big in kind of timeline, or I guess enrollment period is going to be that open enrollment period, which I kind of touched on briefly, which is October 15th through December 7th. That is a huge window where individuals have time to shop their Medicare plan. So say, like we talked about, say you pick a Medicare supplement plan and you want to research, hey, is Medicare Advantage the route for me? You can do that during that open enrollment window and have a effective date of January 1st for that policy. So I highly recommend at least shopping that plan, or at least making sure that you're up to date on how your policy is changing, because there are a lot of changes coming to Medicare, and making sure that you're, hey, the policy is going to change a little bit. Is this still right for your specific health insurance needs?
And maybe a brief aside, but it would be something that would come up as you're enrolling in benefits, just kind of setting the stage for the next year. But what about that dreaded five-letter acronym, IRMA? Can you tell us about that?
Yeah, so IRMA is actually going back to your Medicare Part B premium. Mm-hmm.
So let's tell people what IRMA means.
Yeah, so IRMA is your...
It's a name. It's it's just my great aunt Irma that I have.
The very same.
At the family
reunion. It was named after her, and no one likes her.
Wears socks up to her knees and open shoes.
That's right. So you're... Your
cigarette out of the side of her mouth.
You know, okay. You painted a picture. That's exactly what I picture when I think Irma.
Sorry to all the Irmas out there.
Oh, man. So your Irma is your income monthly related adjusted amount. And that is going specifically toward your Part B premium. So Part B, it's technically right now for 2024, has a standard rate of 174.70. So that's essentially your standard rate. But IRMA, what they do is the government will look at your 2 years back at your 22 tax return right now to determine if that standard rate is increased. So there's a bunch of different gaps depending on if you file individually or jointly, depending on if that increases. A lot of times what happens where an individual is 2 years ago, they were working full time, and now they're retired and making less, there's ways to offset those increases or get you closer to that standard rate. But IRMA is often, once you apply for Part B, Social Security is going to send you a letter saying, hey, we see that your income was over that threshold, and that Part B premium could slightly increase depending on that income.
So give me a scenario. I'm visual. Give me a scenario for context. Of an example of a family, a couple, or a person who might have to take advantage of that.
Yeah, so say husband and wife, say the husband is turning 65 and both of them worked 2 years ago, and that first threshold is going to be $206,000. So say they file their 22 tax return and they made $250,000. That 174.70 is going to jump up, I think, to about 244.80, somewhere in that range. So about
like an extra $800, $900 a year.
For sure. Yeah. And now, say they retired, say the husband or wife retired when they were 64, and now their income is $100,000. What we can do is we can file a Social Security form that will essentially say, hey, that income, we've had a life-changing event where we're no longer making $250,000. We're now at this range below that 206, where they can get back to that 174.70 standard Part B premium. So that's not necessarily, that premium can increase pretty substantially and can get into the 500-600 range per person. So it definitely makes sense to at least have that conversation and at least look at that to see if you are eligible at lowering that IRMA rate.
How do taxes fit into all that? Yeah, they fit into any of that?
Yeah, so, I mean, they're looking at your income and then basing whether or not they're going to adjust your Medicare amount by whatever that income is. So if you're over that $206,000, that's how. So there are a couple things that you can do to appeal to mm-hmm. Cam's point here. If it's,
but is that net worth or is that income?
Just your income.
Yep. Just modified
adjustment. So you can have a net worth exceeding
that could be
and it's
$100 million, but if you only reported $200,000, you're golden.
Okay.
Right? For at least from an IRMA standpoint. But I know there's a couple others, like a sale of a business. I think in that case, you can appeal a sale of a primary residence. You can appeal. Mm-hmm. But on the other hand, things like selling an investment property or doing a Roth conversion where you're kind of forcing or triggering that, in that sense, I don't think you can appeal those.
Correct.
So you have to be kind of aware of what you're doing, or just be willing to at least bite the bullet, if you will, for that first year, knowing that, hey, my premiums are going to come up. But you just have to understand what you're doing or how much control you have over what you're doing.
Do you appeal that through Medicare or Social Security?
Directly through Social Security.
Okay. Interesting. Mm-hmm. My head just exploded.
Yeah. Tracy, I know we don't have the video,
Cam,
but it's like
we're going to become best friends in the next 5 years. That's all right. I can tell you.
5? Yeah, I thought it was like 20.
Oh, we'll see. Shush. Did we talk about Medicare Advantage versus Original Medicare? Do we kind of go into that enough?
A little bit. I mean, the biggest thing I would say.
The question is not did we, but Tracy doesn't remember. So
let's do it again. Why not?
Still bubbling over the last part of the conversation, trying to absorb it. If we can just go back to that.
Yeah, Tracy, you're doing great.
Yep. So remember, original Medicare is Medicare Part A and Part B. So that's your hospitalization and your outpatient care. Now, generally speaking, if you just keep original Medicare, it only covers about 80% of your medical utilization. So a lot of times we highly recommend not to just keep original Medicare because you could have that 20% gap or lack of coverage. So really, the comparison then comes to the Medicare Advantage versus the Medigap and Medicare supplement policies.
Her eye is twitching.
My eye's twitching. Okay.
She'll get it after the show,
I'm
promise.
Sorry. I'm apologizing to our listeners. Give me context. Just give me a family setup, and let's talk about the difference so I can visualize it.
Yep. So let's say that a individual, generally pretty healthy, goes to the doctor for preventative, really doesn't use the whole policy a whole lot. A Medicare Advantage plan might be better off where they have lower premiums and small copays and coinsurance for that policy. The Medicare supplement plan might be for the individual who has higher utilization and has surgeries, been inpatient, where they're going to have significant savings on those reduced out-of-pocket costs. So really that supplement plan is for someone who tends to use the policy a little bit more and have higher utilization.
And that doesn't have anything to do with Part D. That's separate and apart from Part D.
Correct. And with Medicare supplement, you would often add on a standalone prescription drug plan with that.
That makes sense. Thank you.
We got there.
Cole's like hanging off of the edge of the table.
I'm all the way on the table. What do you mean?
Help her understand this. Hey, I'm sure that you deal with far worse at times, but you know, some of us are visual. We have to understand things when you map it out. It's almost like when I was in school, do you remember the stupid word problems they'd give you in math? You know, the red train is going 45 miles an hour east. The blue train is going 45 miles an hour west. How many oranges were in the red train? That's the way my brain interprets that. So the visual context is always
helpful.
That'd
be a lot of oranges really weighing down that train. One more side question I have, though, because I've had clients ask me, kind of thinking from a long-term care perspective or like a skilled nursing standpoint, like something happens, maybe we need a little additional assistance or some form of like short-term nursing home stay. Mm-hmm. I have Medicare. Do I need something more? Like, are there limitations there, or what do we need to be concerned
about? Normally, you don't. I mean, the nice thing is Medicare Advantage and Medicare Supplement, they actually both cover all of the same services. So mm-hmm. CMS, Center for Medicare and Medicaid Services, determines, hey, Medicare Advantage plans and Medicare Supplement have to cover XYZ services. So
sure.
Skilled nursing facilities, all of those are covered under Medicare Supplement and Advantage plans. It just depends if you want to offset those costs with maybe a hospital indemnity plan that'll cover your hospital copay, or just certain little policies here and there to reduce those costs if you do have that utilization.
Cool.
Okay. Explain the donut hole. Cole mentioned it earlier.
Yep. Back to the donut hole.
I always like me a donut hole, but I don't think it's the same kind you're talking about.
Yeah, so the donut hole is in reference to prescription drugs. A lot of times with the prescription drug side, I think is the hardest part to Medicare, because the medical side is often covered pretty well, but the prescription drug side is really dependent on the insurance companies and how they tier their medications. So before we get into the donut hole, there's really right now in 24, there's four stages to that prescription drug plan. First is going to be your deductible phase, where you pay 100% of that prescription cost when you fill as those first medications.
That'd be the glaze, if you will, yeah, on the donut.
Then you get into your copay phase, or like the bread.
There we go. Yep.
Of the donut, where you are paying a small copay for that prescription. Now on the back end, these insurance companies are calculating how much you are paying for those prescriptions and how much they are paying for those prescriptions. And if you reach, I want to say it's like $7,000 in total for those costs of prescriptions, you then go into the donut hole. And that's where you pay 25% of that retail cost of those prescriptions. So a lot of times it really feels like a roller coaster, where the first month you might have to hit that deductible, you pay 100%. Then it drops down the next month in your copay phase, and then you pay 25% of those costs in that donut hole. So it's very important to make sure that you know that your prescriptions are covered, and it's very difficult to kind of navigate and see where those prescriptions are falling with those plans.
That's stressful. Does Medicare send like some sort of sheet showing kind of where you are to kind of paste that? Or
you can normally find those with your insurance company or calling like customer service. Okay.
It seems to me like you'd have to be a little more intuitive when you're approaching this. You have to have a basic idea of what you spend every year on medical costs, what you spend every year on prescriptions, right? I mean,
for sure.
I think people have to be a little bit more involved than we're kind of letting on. You really have to take some.
And know your numbers.
Yeah, I know you guys always advise, you know, the living expense worksheet and being organized and gathering data. All of that's so critical, but this seems like it would be a real necessary aspect. Don't just go to the specialist and say, fix me up here, you know.
There's more to it, definitely.
Yeah, exactly. And actually to touch, and maybe this is a good segue into changes coming for 2025, but in 25 they're actually getting rid of the donut hole.
So, no kidding.
So the donut hole, unfortunately, is all gone in 25. And really that big change is going to be capping your total cost on prescriptions for 25. So say someone right now, they're taking a couple brand name medications. They could be paying a couple $1,000s out of pocket for those medications. Next year, coming in 2025, all prescription drug plans are going to have a cap of $2,000 for those prescriptions for the entire year. So if you do hit that, say you go pick up your medications after you hit that cap, you're essentially going to pay $0 for that prescription.
Wow, that's wonderful.
So it's great.
It's more like a jelly donut now. There's no hole in objectively better.
Yeah, exactly. So it's a big, big change coming. With that change, you could see some increases in premiums for those prescription drug plans.
Yeah, I was going to say, where are they going to eat that? You're going to pay for the change.
Exactly.
Somewhere.
So that's where, especially, I always hit on checking your policy at the end of the year, making sure, hey, is your premium going to double, triple? Because we have heard some stuff that it could
triple.
Premiums could go through the roof. So it really, you want to make sure is the premium. Is the drugs covered? Making sure that you're doing your due diligence on, is this still the best plan for me?
And I don't really have a good gauge right now on Part D premiums. Is there like a rough, like rule of thumb or average, like a cost today?
I would say an average is probably somewhere between $30 to $40. I mean, you could get up into the 100 range. You can also get down less than 10. It really just depends on.
Okay.
The policy and what medications you're taking.
Understood. So it could be manageable, but if you're in that upper tier, that could be a considerable increase.
For sure.
Mm-hmm. What about hidden benefits? You know, what kinds of things does Medicare offer that, I mean, I've got some notes about maybe preventative screenings or wellness programs. Does Medicare call that?
Yeah.
Wow, so Medicare cover that.
And what about silver sneakers? Let's add that to the back end.
Silver sneakers is popular.
But hey, it is.
I am not joking about silver sneakers.
Silver sneakers
fantastic.
Is no joke. It's, let me tell
awesome. You. That's why I brought it up. I want
have
Ken
you ever
to fill
met
us in.
Anybody in silver sneakers? I have. It's, they are yeah. rock stars.
Mm-hmm, that's right. So for anyone who doesn't know, Silver Sneakers is essentially a gym membership to participating locations. And really that's built into both the Medicare supplement and Medicare Advantage plans. So you could find essentially it's a membership to go and utilize their services. And really what these insurance companies are trying to do is promote healthy, active lifestyles, because mm-hmm. at the end of the day, if you're going to that gym, they're probably going to have less claims on the back end. Another thing, too, to kind of promote that is offering preventative services. So a lot of times when people go for their annual checkups, their mammogram screenings, testing screenings, things like that, normally those are all picked up 100% before the deductible. Obviously, it kind of depends on the policy itself. But a lot of those preventative services really encourage people to utilize those and make sure that they're checking up on their daily.
Costs and savings. I want to know what people can do to save money. You see a lot of elders and seniors working in mm-hmm. part-time jobs to pay for their insurance needs. So what can people mm-hmm. do to actually prevent having to do that so they don't break their budget? Is there a best practice for that?
I would say the biggest way to save on Medicare is through the prescription drug side. Any of our clients that come through us, I always recommend utilize GoodRx. So anyone who doesn't know what GoodRx is, essentially it's a site where you can get coupons for medications. So a lot of times if I'm working with a client and they say, hey, I'm paying $100 for this prescription, we can go on GoodRx and type that medication in, and it's $50. And a lot of times, I always recommend asking the pharmacist, hey, are there any GoodRx coupons or any other coupons out there to use?
Great tip.
Because that would really, really utilize and drop kind of that cost. You can also shop your plan. I mean, there most of the premiums with supplement plans and prescription drug plans are going to be very similar. So you're not going to see a huge savings. I would really say, though, on prescriptions is where you can save a pretty good amount.
Yeah. That's a great tip.
I don't know if you've looked into this. I know another popular one I've seen is Cost Plus Drugs, that Mark mm-hmm. Cuban program.
Yep.
That's another very cool one.
Very, very similar to GoodRx. And another one, I think Eagle Pharmacy is pretty popular.
Okay.
So
we've
got a lot of options out there on just what you can do is type in your medication, see if there's coupons out there. A lot of times pharmacies will accept most of those coupons or discounts.
That's really helpful.
Yeah, and can you explain why pharmacies hate us, that we have to use GoodRx like a coupon program to bring that down? Because it doesn't make sense that that's not just
built in. That's a whole other show.
Right? Well,
it's so crazy how expensive.
I never understood it.
Yeah, medications and the cost for these are crazy expensive. So do anything you can. Do your research on if there's any savings out there, because I would highly recommend it.
Yeah, that's great. You know, the one thing that occurs to me in this conversation is the way healthcare management has changed in the last 3 or 4 years, incorporating technology such as telehealth. How does that impact people that are on Medicare?
Yeah, so telehealth is essentially a way to visit your doctor kind of virtually. Mm-hmm. So a lot of times the Medicare Advantage, Medicare Supplement, they're going to have telehealth built in there, where you can utilize, essentially see your doctor from your home, or you've got home health care. There's a lot of ways, and really I think the biggest thing that Medicare is trying to do is give access to mm-hmm. to that health care.
It's wonderful.
To really make sure that individuals are staying healthy, having access to their doctors. Another thing maybe to kind of touch on that point and where someone might use telehealth is, say they go to, they're snowbirds, they get out of Ohio in the wintertime, you can utilize your doctor the phone.
Great example.
And a lot of times, too, you might have access to doctors and hospitals outside of just Ohio. So they're normally when people they're worried about those networks or want to make sure that they keep those costs down. With Medicare, and especially here in Central Ohio, the networks for these policies are expansive, and you've got access to so many doctors across the country.
That's really great for mental health services as well.
Absolutely.
Really wonderful for people who, I mean, I have a family member who doesn't drive, doesn't leave the house. So telehealth has really been fantastic for her in many ways. So that's interesting. Routine checkups, though, I mean, like physical checkups. I know, you know, during COVID, they were using telehealth for weird things like, you know, pneumonia, which I never understood. But, you know, for things like mental health services and basic triaging symptoms and stuff, that must be a great relief to those
folks. Absolutely.
So finally, I want to talk about the improved access to preventive services. So how will new preventive services that Medicare is covering help seniors stay healthier in the long term? And we've touched on a lot of information, but if you could kind of synopsize it, what would you say?
I would say the insurance company as a whole and CMS are always looking at ways to increase that access to healthcare. So whether they're doing testing, I guess to give an example would be with insulin and diabetes. So there, a lot of these insurance companies and CMS are putting caps to insulin, or they're really doing their research to see what are individuals needing, kind of making sure that these policies are covering that, and Part A and Part B are covering that as well too. So I guess they're always changing, and as we talked about, there's a lot of changes coming to Medicare. So it's really, I would say, they're changing and making it more expansive for individuals in certain needs.
Well, this has been wonderful. I know this is a big part of our business, Cole. You're nodding your head, and it's a big chunk of what our certified financial planners help to manage with our clients. Thanks for being such a great resource, Camden Solomon from Seniority Benefit Group. We know this was a little bit of a long one, but we hope you enjoyed it, and we hope you'll catch us on the next one. Thanks very much.
Thanks.
That's a wrap for today's episode of the Managing to Be Wealthy podcast. We help you make the most of your money without any hidden fees or commissions. Remember, the best investment you can make is in yourself and your financial future. Keep listening for more expert advice and tips. And don't forget to subscribe to our podcast. To schedule a 1-hour complimentary consultation to discuss your financial concerns, visit our website, managingtobewealthy.com.